You're listening to the Next Wave Radio Network.
Accents. So getting a little bit of a late start because Jeff had to poop. What was the consistency on that?
Oh. I want to know what color it was. That'll tell you more than anything else.
Runny. That's the color.
And green.
I did not sign up for this podcast. I'm sorry.
Eating a lot of fiber. A lot of salad.
I was told Jeff. There would be punch and pie.
This is the new podcast on the Next Wave Radio Network, Scatologic, where we just talk about shit. This is the Editing Bay on the Next Wave Radio Network. My name's Joe.
And I'm Joel.
And we have a guest with us. Now, you haven't heard him yet.
No.
This will be the first time many of our listeners have heard him. But we've already recorded two podcasts with him with the Star Wars retrospective that will be up soon.
Yay.
Welcome, Walt Threlkeld, sir.
Wow. Pleasure to be here. And to be introduced with a teaser.
Yes.
always a privilege.
Thank and now you have to go.
Had to do it right. Well, the reason why I wanted to bring you in was, like I said, we talked about Star Wars with you. We did the prequel podcast with you, the original trilogy podcast. And tonight we're going to be talking about, because as you probably know, this is our month of holidays. And so we've been looking at holiday movies. We had Jack Frost. We looked at Jingle All the Way last week. Mm-hmm. And this week, something a little special. Not exactly a movie.
Feature length.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Definitely feature length. we're talking about the Star Wars holiday special. It was a dark time for the Rebellion.
I wonder how many of our audience actually knew there was a Star Wars holiday special. It's one of those things.
When did you first figure out there was a holiday
special? I had to go to a sci-fi convention. This is like circa 1997 or 8. Uh-huh. And they had a little, it was a little black and white TV like in the corner, and some dude was selling bootleg VHS copies of it.
Yeah.
And I was like, what is this? It looked like it was fan-made until Mark Hamill showed up.
No, fans would have done a better job.
They probably would have, yeah.
There are some really good fan films out there. Mm-hmm. Now, talking with Walt, he caught it when it first aired.
I am that old.
Oh, my God.
I was 5 and a half. What was it? November 17th, 1978.
That's
a day
good
that
memory.
Will live in infamy.
Yeah.
But yes, it is one of my earliest memories, probably right up there with actually seeing the first film for the first time. I do remember looking forward to this program for weeks and weeks and sitting down with my parents and my older sister to watch it.
So this aired, almost like a year and a half after the original film came out?
Well, you know, the original film was May of 77.
Yeah.
Was when it hit theaters. So this was a year and a half later, basically.
Uh-huh.
And it looks like it was thrown together, too.
Right.
Like, just over a weekend.
It's surprising to me because, like you said, the way that it looks so thrown together, it looks like it was slapped together for the 77 holiday season. You know, to have a year and a half between the first movie and this, like, the next year was when Empire Strikes Back came out.
That's right.
Yeah. Hey, Mark Hamill had a whole new face by this.
Yeah.
Almost. He had about a new face.
It looked like he had a new face between A New Hope and the holiday special.
Yeah. What I'm talking about.
I thought you meant between the holiday special
I'm
and Empire.
I'm saying there was that much time for them to do a bang-up job at reconstructing his face.
Some horrible makeup they had going on.
Between that and, like, his hair, he looked like Julie Andrews, like in Peter Pan. Uh-huh. Like the old Julie Andrews. He still kind of had a little bit of the pointy
Sandy
nose.
Duncan, even. Yes.
Yeah.
Pick any short-haired blonde female star of the time, and he's going to out-female them. Well, you know what I found ironical, if you will, about all that is that with all the facial scarring and the reconstructive surgery and the pounds upon pounds of makeup, he looks like the Joker. Like way ahead of time.
Yes.
So it was really rather prescient.
Yeah.
So the story to this holiday special is the Wookiees, they celebrate Life Day instead of Christmas. It's a great sci-fi way to get out of saying Christmas or Hanukkah or Kwanzaa. It's Life Day.
Yeah.
And you know what? Honestly, at its core, it's kind of a cool thing that, like, they just recognize every species kind of has its own, you know, its own celebration for life. And, you know, humans have their many celebrations. And, you know, they're showing that Wookiees have theirs, their Life Day. So half of the story is Han Solo, through the use of recycled Star Wars footage,
oh my God,
trying to get Chewbacca back to it's not Kashyyyk in this.
How do they pronounce
it? They called it Planet Kazook.
Kazook.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
And so he's trying to get Chewbacca back to his home, to his family, to celebrate Life Day. Well, meanwhile, you've got Chewbacca's family.
Yeah, let's talk about Chewbacca's family, shall we?
His father, Itchy.
Yeah,
that's right.
His son, Lumpy. And his wife, Mala. Now, I want to just get to the names here for a second.
Okay.
So we have Chewbacca, and for short, we call him Chewie.
Chewie.
So now you've got his father, who's named Itchy.
Mm-hmm.
So is that his full name, Itchbacca? Is that his name? Is his son, like, Lumpbacca? Is Bacca the last name?
No.
No.
If you really dive into it and look it up, they did give each of these three characters longer names later, and Bacca is not necessarily the
You did your fucking research, Joe.
Not their Christian name, or I'm sorry, their Life Day name. But yeah, they were kind of tied in. You got to give them credit for accepting this as canon, that they're tied into this, that these characters exist, that yes, we did in fact refer to them by those ridiculous names, but it's because it was short. Or something longer.
Something much worse.
Does this fit into canon, though? I mean, like, hasn't it just been, like, universally...
No.
No?
I mean, even though Lucasfilm won't really acknowledge it, and, you know, none of them like talking about it, and all of that, it does, as a matter of fact, fit into the Star Wars canon. I mean, it introduces Boba... Well, I don't want to give away
any
spoilers, but it does officially... They can't pretend that it didn't introduce Boba Fett, because that was the big
But even that part of it was its own little self-encapsulated 10-minute segment.
But it also introduces the Wookiee homeland and these family members of Chewbacca.
Yeah.
They don't pretend it doesn't exist. They just don't like acknowledging it.
And Chewbacca's father reappears in, like, the novels and the comic books.
Oh, really?
His father reappears. Like, there's this one story about Chewbacca, and there's the albino Wookiee. And I can't remember what the albino Wookiee's name is. But
starring Kevin Bacon?
Chewbacca, yes.
I love that movie.
But Chewbacca has, like, this ongoing competition with this Wookiee, and you get to actually see, like, the Itchy character, and it is, Walt's right, it's a much longer name. I can't remember how it's pronounced. But it does start, like, Itch something.
Yeah.
And it's his father, and he's basically telling Chewbacca about, like, growing up, becoming a man, the rite of manhood in the Wookiee community or whatever. So it is canon. It's just an embarrassing place to stem from.
Well, I don't think anybody would disagree that the characters themselves are canon, because George Lucas apparently did have a hand in the story behind this, loosely, and then handed it off where it was taken from him.
I think that was a fumble. I don't know that anybody accepted that handoff, to tell you the truth.
It was kicked across the field, and then...
And they punted big time.
No shit.
So within the course of this story, as the Wookiee family are waiting for Chewbacca to arrive, you've got many cameos. They'll call up some of your familiar characters from Star Wars on, like, the video phones, or we have appearances from people like Art Carney and Harvey Korman. Jefferson Starship, who I'm convinced they got for this thing just because they had Starship in their name.
Of course.
Sure.
And like, Diane Carroll has this, like...
Creepy.
Very creepy, dirty
scene.
There isn't an
porn.
Adjective for what this is.
It's
creepy,
so inappropriate.
Doesn't do it justice.
For a holiday special? Who thought this was a good idea? Hey, we're going to get all the kids around the fireplace. It's Christmas Eve. Let's put on the Star Wars holiday special and jerk off together.
And this woman's going to just, like... Just flirt with a Wookiee.
Your fantasy.
It's virtual reality.
I find
we should stress.
Find you adorable.
Yeah, he's.
I don't need to ask you how you find me. I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa! What is happening here?
It's grim, and it goes on forever.
Time, and then she breaks out into song.
Well, that is indicative to everything. Not indicative, but that is everything that takes place in this. I don't want to call it a film. In this holiday special, everything goes too long.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we start off... Okay, so it starts off with Han and Chewie in the Falcon, and it's this, like, Harrison Ford's asleep.
Poor Harrison Ford.
Oh, he's asleep.
He looks miserable through this.
Like, don't worry, Chewie. I'm going to get you back. I told you, we're going to get you back for life. Bring me that man. You know, suddenly going into his Cowboys and Aliens routine. No, but he's half asleep. Don't worry, buddy. We'll shake
we'll
these Imperials. We'll
life
get you
day.
Back for Life Day.
By the way, good drinking game. Every time Harrison Ford says Life Day in this episode, take a shot.
Or buddy, yeah.
Or
hugs a Wookiee, which he does quite consistently.
Try to keep up in that third
act. Just never stop imbibing.
So they take off, and then we get, like, the big roll credits, and here's all. And that's the last time you hear anybody speak English for about 15 minutes.
Yeah, the good first act. First A block.
It's Wookiee family speaking Wookiee speak And no translation whatsoever. I mean, obviously you can kind of figure out what's going on through like physical context.
And Andy Warhol's like, I get it. I mean, it's just, yeah, at this point, they've really, not 5 minutes in, they've gone off the deep end. It's just ridiculous.
And even, like, they don't even really sound like the Chewbacca that we know and love. You know, the little lovable growls. They've all kind of been tailored to their personalities. And the little kid, little Lumpy, sounds like a pig being slaughtered. Like he's just,
yeah. Oh no, it's a headache.
Yeah.
You can't watch this thing without some Advil because immediately you're going to get
Pepto-Bismol. Yeah.
You're going to get a migraine listening to these things scream. Now, going back to the Falcon segments, it's almost like they tried shooting it before the lighting guy showed up.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, yeah, Harrison Ford's face is in shadow for like yeah, the top half of his
face.
They
lit that scene with a mag light.
Yes.
It's pretty obvious. With like a reading lamp.
Oh my God.
Clipped to the headboard.
You know, and you'd think that you just got done filming this thing. Like it looked like it was the cockpit of the Falcon that used. Yeah, the same set. Why couldn't they have lit that thing properly?
Unions, man. They cost too much.
Unions?
Gotta get a
was
couple
there
guys
strike
down there.
In 78?
One guy to plug in the extension cord, another guy to turn it on. It's expensive, man.
So answer me this. At one point, Lumpy is, I guess, told to do something by his mother because there's a lot of howling and growling, and she's like, you know, come over.
There's
come
some
over
gesticulating, yes.
Yes. And so he goes over and like wants to eat a cookie and then like hides the cookie. Mm-hmm.
A Wookie-ookie.
A Wookie-ookie?
I'm not making that up.
Is that what it's
oh,
called?
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah, a Wookie-ookie.
Our Carney asks for one by name later in the show.
I totally missed
those are delicious Wookie-ookies I smell. Mm-hmm. Kashyyyk's best.
I completely missed that.
Oh, I played a game similar to that at summer camp, but it did not go down. Cookie.
So correct me if I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Did he take out the trash?
It looked like laundry bin. I couldn't tell what it was.
So he took out, I thought for a second he took out the trash, like as if they were expecting the garbage truck to come around the trees. Like, oh, it's Tuesday, got to take the trash out.
Well, you know, you clean up for Life Day.
Well, I get that you clean up for Life Day, but it seemed awfully familiar.
A little too familiar.
A little too familiar. A little too human, some of the things that they were doing.
Wookiees are just like us. It's a story of tolerance.
No,
like
actually,
Ender's Game.
They're not. And that's something that Han outlines in A New Hope, that like, you know, Wookiees are violent creatures, and they'll rip your arms out of your sockets when you lose, and they seemed awfully gentle.
Pretty lovable.
Yeah.
And obsessed with, like, X-Wing fighters. Like, apparently that's what everybody plays with.
Whittling X-Wings.
old man Itchy.
Now, am I correct in assuming that this takes place, like, right after A New Hope?
Sure.
Okay. Why does everybody speak with Chewbacca's family as if they've known them for years?
Oh, we go back. Oh. It's like we're family.
Now you're asking questions. Now you're seeking logic. We're really going to go down that rabbit hole?
I guess.
You said it fits in the canon, man.
Where
I want to hear it.
Okay. The next note I have is at minute 7:23, and all my note is what the fuck is happening?
Oh, I have one of those notes in mine, too.
That's not just the Cirque du Soleil little montage, is it?
No,
are we not
it's
even there
right
yet?
Before it. It's right before it when like, Itchy grabs something from, like, the mantle, and then he, like, calls over for the kid Wookiee to come over, and then they have, like, a weird little moment, and then they start howling at Mala.
Well, it's one of their precious moments figurines, which you can clearly see on, by the way, the very same TV shelf that I had in my living room, which is the crazy thing about the decor in this Wookiee house. They absolutely went to, like...
Went to the Radio Shack down the street.
Whatever this 1978 equivalent of IKEA was to decorate this place.
They went to Rent-A-Center.
Yes.
The same Rent-A-Center.
100. Absolutely. And so, yeah, I'll take that credenza.
Yeah, no, it was around that time. It was right before the Cirque du Soleil thing, which I think is funny that we've all called it the Cirque du Soleil
sequence. That's what I had, the psychedelic circus.
Yes, but it was right before then, and they start like howling at each other, and I just kind of hit my limit with the Wookiee speak, and I was just, what the fuck is happening? It
I'll tell you what's
me
happening.
To know that you guys have all thought that.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening is you are witnessing Star Wars jump the shark before even Fonzie jumped the shark. If we're going back historically, I mean, yeah, that's pretty much the moment that I think everybody collectively said, "Oh my God!"
And it happened so early. What did you say? Like minute seven? Like
7:23?
We're barely into this 2-hour abortion, and already it's boring and it's crazy, and it made me uncomfortable.
Uh huh.
And We were so hard up. We were so just what we were going for. Somebody smoking a big fat cigar in a room somewhere. Yes.
Now, look, I mean, I get that you've got these Christmas specials that they do, the holiday specials, like Pixar does them. You've got the Toy Story ones. Madagascar has a holiday special they do. I think every year they do a unique one.
Kung Fu Panda, I saw that.
Yeah, Kung Fu Panda.
You're extending your brand, and you're milking a property for a buck.
Right.
And you're hopefully putting out something that may, if you're lucky, become a holiday tradition.
And it gives you a chance to tease the sequel that's coming out the following summer.
But the way that they've done it is that they've used the key characters that you enjoy from those movies. How are you going to make a Star Wars holiday special and, like, Luke Skywalker, Princess Leia, and Han Solo maybe have a collective 3 minutes of screen time in this whole thing? Who watches this thing and goes, I can't wait to see Chewbacca? You know, even though Chewie is a big character, you don't even really get to experience him.
Yeah.
You get Art Carney.
Yeah,
for
nothing
most of the
says
story.
Rebel freedom fighter like an aging Ed Norton. And I don't even mean the good Ed Norton either. I mean,
Rebel freedom. God bless him. He is doing the best job he could possibly do.
Yeah, he's not bad.
I debate that.
Really?
I mean, yeah, the material is absolute crap, but he's not trying to do anything.
No,
he's trying a little harder than Harrison Ford is.
Well, okay.
I argue that
the lighting guy was trying harder than Harrison Ford was, and we know how that turned out. No. I mean, I don't know. If I'm going to give anybody credit for anything, like trying to do something with this material, it's probably Harvey Korman.
Yeah.
I disagree.
And
see,
that's,
now I've got to respectfully disagree with that. I feel like Harvey Korman mailed it in completely when he did, you know, he does that cooking show thing.
Well,
like
that was ridiculous.
I mean, however, I did, when that started, what do I have? I actually wrote a note about... when the Harvey Korman thing, the Harvey Korman cooking show, Bantha Surprise. Just as I wondered, was this funny in the 70s? I shamefully caught myself laughing. Just at the very end, as he's doing the, now stir and whip and stir, and he's like drinking it. I'm like, okay, that's
see,
that's
what I'm
funny
talking
physical
about,
comedy.
Right? He gave it some energy. He gave it some oomph.
But that was it.
Yeah.
He has two other segments that he's a part of that he adds absolutely nothing to.
Oh, well, I don't disagree. I'm just saying comparatively...
but Art Carney at least was like, hey, you want to, you're looking around my store, hey, Mala, don't worry, that shaggy carpet, like,
yeah.
At least, I don't know, for me, for the money I didn't spend on this, I felt like he at least gave me something. He was one person that was actually inhabiting this world with these Wookiees.
Right. Was anybody else disturbed by the fact that his shirt was unbuttoned like down to his navel, though? Like,
no.
I could see his...
That's how I like my Art Carney.
Totally turned on by that. That's how I expect it, and I would have changed the channel otherwise.
More Art Carney, please.
So after 10 minutes, we finally return to actual Star Wars characters, and that's when they call up Mark Hamill.
Yep.
And
this is post-motorcycle accident, a car accident.
I mean, again, let's not... gloss over the fact that everyone is literally phoning this in.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's the story progression.
I agree with you.
Phone it in.
I absolutely agree with you. There are just different levels of phone. Now, I feel like if Harrison Ford was sleepwalking through the beginning of this thing, Mark Hamill was giving off the impression that he was maybe a little too engaged just because, and I'm not trying to give him credit for this. What I'm saying, though, is when the view screen comes on, he just like dives into overly obnoxious Luke Skywalker.
It was, yeah, I get the
way
feeling
way too saccharine. Oh, hey, Mala, how are? And I'm like, whoa!
This isn't Reading Rainbow. This
right.
is a holiday special.
Yes,
right?
He was. It seemed like he was the only one that was like, all right, we're doing a thing for kids, so let's do something for children. Mm-hmm. Everybody else was like, no, we're about to watch Diane Carroll strip in the view screen.
I don't know, the way he was like yelling at R2 at the end of that segment, I get the feeling the minute the cameras cut, like the yelling continued to like the poor PA and the lighting, like, who the fuck booked
like
me for this?
Christian,
get my agent on the
Bale
phone.
Meltdown.
Yeah. I just don't know. I mean, the urban legend is that he was, you know, obviously hopped up on painkillers from the car wreck and all that other kind of stuff. Which,
I
mean, that all happened, again, about a year and a half before he sat down to film this thing. So I'm going to kind of rule that out unless he developed as strong a habit as Carrie Fisher had. But it would have to be like a fistful of Quaaludes, I think, to really explain what's going on there.
Favorite Clint Eastwood.
I don't know.
I was about to say the same thing. Favorite Clint Eastwood movie.
Yeah.
The
slowest Clint Eastwood movie.
Entertain ourselves. Well, as long as we're talking original cast, should we go right? I know we don't see Princess Leia until
we don't
the very
see it for
end.
A while, man. We don't see it.
Yeah. Oh no. Yeah.
she wraps
really
up the
fast
show.
Forward. Well, she has her moment.
She shows up.
She phones it in for a second too.
Yeah, no, she absolutely
does. From the backdrop of the super high budget Rebel headquarters,
just like a whiteboard.
C-3PO.
Which, literally, yeah, it's a blank wall and an IBM typewriter, and that's Rebel headquarters.
Can I ask this? How is it that, like, Mala calls up Luke Skywalker, and he understands everything she's saying, and he's a fucking farm boy, yet they call up Princess Leia, who's supposed to be an ambassador, and she needs C-3PO to translate fucking everything for her? That doesn't seem to make sense.
Yeah, 3PO needed something to do.
Yep.
She was spoiled anyway. She's grown up with interpreters all of her life.
There you go.
That's a good point, yeah. Those privileged princesses.
Exactly.
I like the fact that...
Luke had to learn new languages to buy power converters, so...
That's good.
Leia never
that's,
had that issue.
That's good.
I like the fact that they're able to just dial up like the Imperial Alliance, or not the Alliance.
The Rebel Alliance. The most important key members of the Rebel Alliance. And they've got
them
on speed
dial.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. I'll just call up the leader of the Rebellion right now. And yet the Empire can't find them through three movies.
Isn't it? Do they call up Leia or does Leia call them?
The lines of communication seem very flimsy throughout this entire
thing.
You
mean you had a hard time following what was going on?
I had to stop
you
and
don't
rewind.
Speak Wookiee?
And take notes.
Without subtitles?
What was my
I speak
my
the language of love, Walt.
When Carrie Fisher first shows up,
Universal.
I'm like, hide your cocaine, it's Carrie Fisher. And when she gets to the view screen to talk, I don't know if you notice this, she gets up and walks, and it looks like she's losing her fucking balance.
Yeah, yeah.
She's like holding on to everything that's nailed down.
Every time you see her, if she's standing, she's completely propping herself up. And,
yeah,
like,
that's true.
By the end of this thing, she's holding on to Chewie.
She's body hugging him the entire time, just caressing
like
his chest.
Like he's got handlebars. Like she's going to slip in the shower.
Yes.
It's funny to imagine 7-foot-tall Peter Mayhew, also probably coked out of his mind inside that suit, being like, listen, bitch, I can't hold us both up.
You know what I like to
me
imagine?
Me and his 50-pound fursuit.
The very end when Chewie and Han show up, and like Chewie has this big tearful reunion with his family. He has that romantic moment with Mala. And
awkward.
All I can think is, those are two dudes in Wookiee suits.
Now pretend like you're going to kiss the Wookiee. Closer. I really want to see it in your eyes.
Do you know who directed this? Was some, I can't remember what his name. He's done all kinds of like Christmas specials.
Yeah.
Like that's his forte.
Oh, it was
his name was Steve Binder.
There you go. And like 70s variety shows was his
before
forte.
This, his big moment was doing specials for Barry Manilow.
Yep.
And Liza, I believe.
Which is no surprise that this is how this special plays out, like
but
one of those bad 70s variety shows.
That was after the director that Lucas picked quit.
It was the guy Lucas went to USC with.
Went to USC with him and contributed the best part of the special. He's the one who hired the animation studio out of Toronto to produce the Boba Fett
thing. Which is amazing.
That is clearly the highlight of this.
It has no place in this thing, in this whole special.
Nor should
this thing has no business being here. Like, it is way better than everything else that's surrounding it, and they put it, they like slide it right in the middle, the very middle of
it's a minute 50.
Shit sandwich.
Minute
I don't
50.
Know. I mean, uh-oh. Granted, it's absolutely the coolest thing in this 2 hours of television programming, but I wonder if it only looks good because everything else is such complete shit.
Sure, by comparison.
I'm going to ask you, if you took somebody who didn't even know the Star Wars holiday special existed and just showed them this 10 minutes of animation, and they're a fan, are they going to think it's cool? Are they going to think it's good?
Okay, I'm going to answer that in two different ways. Story-wise, just following it story-wise, it's bad. It's a bad narrative. I mean, it starts off with a narration from some random captain, and it's like, Stardate, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, who the fuck is this character? And even the story itself, they went to find a talisman, and it caused a sleeping virus. And they had to get like Boba Fett.
Boba's good, but then
is
Boba's
good, but then
bad,
bad,
but then he
good.
Calls Vader, but
like,
then someone listened in on the call.
He could have just not helped them and delivered them to Vader.
Yeah.
Like the story itself doesn't make sense,
right.
But
oh, and he has them at the end and instead he's like,
just
leaves. We'll see you next time and flies away. He's like, fucking shoot them right
see
now.
See you later, my friend. Yeah, exactly. But animation wise, it's got that like heavy metal kind of animation style.
Right. That's why I thought it was too.
So I think I like it in that respect. I think it's kind of cool. It's trippy. I like seeing the origin of Boba Fett. It's a cool, unique Star Wars little bit of visual memorabilia.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Well, no, as a time capsule, it's fantastic, but I'm just saying on its own merits.
Well, where else have you seen any of the original Star Wars characters, like, in animation? I mean, like, hand-drawn animation.
And voiced by the cast, too.
And voiced by the cast as well. I got him back. So just on that alone, on those merits, it was like, oh, this is something I've never seen before. Why is it taking 30 years for us to see it?
Shall we tell folks where to find this, some of whom might not even know that they have it in their home?
Yeah. Yes. I didn't realize this either until I looked it up. I own it.
Doing our homework. The cool thing about this is that this is Lucasfilm and the folks behind the Empire, or if you want to call it that, acknowledging that something from this thing did exist and putting it out in DVD Blu-ray format. So anybody who owns the Star Wars Complete Saga Blu-ray that came out in 2011 owns this cartoon. And it is an Easter egg to be found on there. My notes say that you find it on the episode 5 section of disc 8.
There are like 20 discs in this.
So go to the episode 5 section of disc 8 and click on Pursued by the Imperial Fleet, which pops up another menu. You want to click on The Collection, which pops up another menu allowing you to click on...
This is playing out like the Harvey Korman cooking
section.
They
did what they could to... Yeah, oh, this is riveting radio, isn't it?
And
next,
and
click on Concept Boba Fett Armor. And finally, click on First Look. And,
so it's right there on the surface, just a few seconds away.
They wanted you to see it.
It's going to take you to an overpass. You're going to meet a guy named Ralph. When you do, you got to give him $1.50.
Sorry to grind this to a halt,
no,
but I thought it was
all.
Rather cool that...
the password is...
This is out there.
Eagle flies at midnight.
The password is Mala.
So did that segment go on too long? Is that what we're saying?
Well, it's the highlight of the show.
No. You know what? Okay, so I just talked about... what was her name? Mala.
Mala.
Was like every dude in this thing trying to put the moves on Chewie's wife?
Absolutely.
Like Luke at one point, Luke's like, come on, Mala. give me a smile.
Well, look.
And then like Art Carney at one point is like, is that how you think an old friend?
Yep,
and like,
I picked up on that.
Everyone's trying to put their dirty mitts on Chewie's wife.
Well, look at her.
Even Han at the end. You know, you can tell they've got history. Yeah. Like there was one rainy night that Chewie couldn't make it home. And they put Lumpy to bed.
Yeah, they did.
And Itchy was passed out in his own drool.
What are you talking about?
They busted out the Sulliston gin.
It's just a weird, like, three-way with Itchy and Mullen. I crossed the
now
line.
Now it's gone too far.
Yeah. What do you got? It looks like you were looking something up.
No, we're doing the same thing. No, I'm still kind of stuck with the image of her. Well, you know, it was a little jarring because the first time we see her, she's in the apron.
Uh-huh.
And then she takes the apron off and there's nothing underneath.
It's
like,
a naked Wookiee.
Oh, shit. Why now?
There's no distinguishing.
I feel dirty.
There's nothing that distinguishes her as a female.
No.
In this whole thing.
I'd tell you.
Would it be better if she had boobs?
Well, no, but if she wore like, you know, Chewie wears his bandolier, you know, have her wear
a mini skirt
purse.
Right?
A purse, earrings,
a tutu.
Just earrings on a Wookiee. Just
go.
Something, like something to kind of show that she's, because Itchy's,
a sensible tote.
Itchy's gray, so you get like, okay, Itchy, Lumpy's small, so you get he's a kid. But like you put Mala and Chewie next to each other and take the thing off of, like when you see them all in the red clan robes at the end, like they all look the same.
Well, first of all, like when Chewie finally comes home, spoiler alert, like she's bigger than him, like physically bigger.
Well, she's wearing heels.
I guess that's what it is. But her face is just like three times the size, and at least you can tell there's a man in there. Like she's walking like a man, or like a lesbian, I guess. But walking like a man, like they should have got a girl in there, saunter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and then because I want a Wookiee to turn me on.
Just tuck it back a little.
That was the disappointing
where
part.
Where are we
me.
In the narrative here?
Oh my God,
have we lost our way?
I'd like to jump to the cantina scene starring B. Arthur.
Oh, the only science fiction moment in this film. because there's no way on earth anyone would find B. Arthur attractive. And so that's what?
Again, 70s humor.
Oh, yeah.
If you watch a lot of Three's Company like I did, or The Ropers. I see that through line.
So, she plays like the cantina.
Wait
she
a
runs
minute.
One
she's
of the
not
cantinas.
Mrs. Roper.
No, but I'm just saying like old people finding other old people attractive was a trope from the 70s.
Yeah.
Well, that explains Maud. basically.
This is what
in
I'm
a nutshell,
saying,
doesn't it? Yeah.
Hence the B. Arthur tie-in. Nice way to bring it around.
So when we get into this bit, mm-hmm. it's like the Imperial forces are at Chewie's home.
Yeah.
And they're searching, and then suddenly this thing comes on the screen, mm-hmm. on the TV, and it's like, attention.
Lockdown.
This is required viewing for all Imperial forces.
Right.
And then it starts, and it's like, life on Tatooine. And I'm like, This is like right now, everyone needs to watch this.
This is Bruce Valanche at his best with that writing right there, I'm telling you.
And so this thing starts, and halfway through it, while she's doing her bit and Harvey Korman's like professing his love and drinking stuff through his head, this thing comes on the screen, and it's like, attention, Tatooine is on lockdown. So, I mean, that basically tells us that we weren't just watching reality TV, mm-hmm. but we were watching real time. It's happening right now, reality television in the Star Wars universe.
Oh, yeah. It's real time. Which is what confused me when Little Lumpy is watching the cartoon, the aforementioned cartoon,
uh-huh.
was apparently the one thing that wasn't being watched in real time. And for a second, I was confused, like, is he watching this now? Like, is this a...
Right.
The way Wikipedia explains it is that he watches an adventure, one of his father's past adventures.
Uh-huh.
Mm. I was like, I'm having trouble tying it together. I'd given up by that
point. Nothing makes any sense with how they're watching things, that Mala's watching a cooking show with a four-armed human or whatever that alien
robot.
Is. Whatever he is. Sure. Was it a robot? Was it supposed to be a robot?
He was acting like a robot. That could have just been the acting.
Everything speaks English.
Mm-hmm.
Even on the Wookiee planet.
Basic. Thank you very much.
My bad. There you go. Everything speaks basic. And, like, they don't watch it. Not that I wanted
except
to
the Wookiees during the 10-minute living room conversation.
Not that I wanted to see more Wookiees speak. But, you know, at least, I don't know. And this is the nerd in me that's like, wait a minute. You know, there's no authenticity to this holiday special. But they're just, there was so much bad, like, bad SNL. Like, this is mm-hmm. SNL at its worst when you watch, like, bits that just don't work. Not only do they not work, but they go on for 20 minutes.
They fall flat, yeah.
And that's what we're watching here. But, no, okay, so
no,
in the cantina.
I just, so there's this whole long, and this is kind of a theme throughout the special, which is there are these skits that go on for a while, as you mentioned, and then you think they're going to end, and then they break out into song.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, fuck, I got to sit through this scene another 3 minutes while B. Arthur belts out a show tune.
Is this the best musical number of this special, do you think?
Oh, I didn't say that. I just said it was another.
I know, I'm asking the question.
I liked the scene. You know, I like B. Arthur. B. Arthur was great in this.
That's what I'm saying.
I thought she was fun.
She sold us.
I thought she was strong. I believed her as, like, she's the only actor that I thought, oh, this they could totally write her into the canon. I believe her as the cantina
really?
Owner. Yeah.
I mean, they're doing the whole bit where they put Tatooine under, like, martial law. It's mm-hmm. on lockdown. She has to, like, everyone
kick
has
everyone
to disperse.
Out.
She has to kick everyone out. No one's leaving. And so she offers everybody free drinks.
Okay, another round on me.
I don't know how she stays in business.
She does it twice.
She does. She gives everyone a free round of drinks. And then she sings a song about having that last drink. Again, mm-hmm. for kids, guys.
After being creepily stalked by Harvey Korman.
Yes.
For way too long,
but
once again.
Luckily, at least, you know, we see that affection get returned a little bit, I think, at the end. What do you want? Harvey Korman falls in love with a man that's a bartender.
Tale as old as time.
Yeah. So the song about drinking, about having that last drink. And again, I think there are children. This is supposed to be aimed at children. And it's all these weird adult, not undertones, just straight up tones.
You know, that's a sign of the times, though. Again, this is when this came out, 78.
Yeah, this was back when Mr. Rogers smoked. I mean, you know, this was
exactly.
Like...
Well, again, not to bring up Three's Company again.
This was before Seatbelts, Joe.
But Company, the entire theme of Three's Company was, you know, it was sex jokes over and over again. And I was raised on Three's Company.
Okay, but Three's Company was a primetime television show that was billed as that.
Yeah.
This is Star Wars. This was based on Star Wars.
And the special did preempt both Wonder Woman and The Incredible
Hulk. So, you know, and you know they were advertising this for like weeks and weeks. Hey, kids, the Star Wars holiday special. Make sure you catch it.
Come watch a Wookiee jerk off to a hologram.
To Diane Carroll.
We're not kidding.
Oh my gosh,
that was really uncomfortable.
Like honestly, just the collection of talent that they got for this thing,
mm-hmm.
even for the 70s, even for 78, this seems really fucking weak. Like, I mean, yeah. Honestly, they couldn't have gotten...
Couldn't have gotten Carol Burnett. Had to go with Harvey Korman.
Seriously. Yeah. You could have gotten the whole Carol Burnett
couldn't
crew
get Betty White. Had to go with B. Arthur.
Exactly.
Instead of Art Carney, we could have gotten Tim Conway and had, like, you know, Star Wars teams up with the Carol Burnett crew.
I think Richard Pryor would have lended a lot to this. That would have been... That would have been a get, in my opinion. That would have been...
Yes. Where was Jim Henson? Where were the Muppets? You know, they were big
then.
They
were always kind of at odds with, well, no, I guess
no,
not.
No, they worked together.
They did, dude. Yeah. Didn't they? But that was before then.
It was before Empire, before we got Yoda and stuff. But, I mean, honestly, they had a relationship at that point.
You bring up a good point. I have no answers. I have no satisfactory answers for you. It could have, all the things that this special could have been,
it just
lost.
It just seems silly to me. It seems silly that they didn't try to use this as a way to marry Star Wars with some other successful franchise.
Well, the problem is again, you had the producers and the directors who only knew how to do, like, variety TV, 70s, you know, with, like, musical numbers and dance numbers. And that's basically, so they were forcing their format
the
into this world.
The Love Boat was pretty much the template for this.
It's exactly what this was, yeah. So it's all musical numbers and psychedelic circuses. We're just all...
It just hurts so much.
Sounds better than it really turned out to be.
One of my favorite lines that B. Arthur gives, it's just this random line, and it doesn't... But at one point, she's trying to get, like, the aliens to leave the bar, and she just starts talking to one alien. She's like, Ludlow, you're heartless. And, like, I wanted that on a shirt. I wanted that on a T-shirt. No one would know where it was from.
So what's with the little tree of life ceremony that they do in the end. How do they go from, like, holding snow globes in their living room to wearing red robes?
Well, this is my question. This is my question that I have for you is, when they grab the snow globes, do those snow globes actually transform them into the red robes and transport them to the tree of life? Or is it like they're jacking into the Matrix? Because, you know, does that explain how Leia and Luke and R2 and C-3PO can also be there? Are they all, like, at home with their little life day globes, and it's the collective consciousness over, you know, from the across the universe, all those that are celebrating life day coming together to, like, this matrix ethereal plane to celebrate? Because they do, like, they walk through space into a sun.
Literally.
That may be the biggest reach in the history.
Put way more thought into this than I thought.
Deconstructing the holiday special. The bottom line is nobody gave two shits, Joe. Nobody put as much thought into this as you just did. I promise you that.
I gotta believe that there was someone, as a writer, I feel like somebody was writing stuff and...
Bruce Valanche
was writing stuff. But there were, like, five other people that were writing along with him. Someone had to be like, okay, no, wait, this is the vision I have. Vision had to have been in there somewhere. Someone had to have been like, well, no, let's... Like, the terms true to the character, I like to believe were somehow thrown out in the writing room.
Oh, you're so naive.
I think there were some very long lunches in these writing sessions, to tell you the truth, that stretched on into the cocktail hour.
A few liquid lunches.
And they're like, good work today, folks. Yeah, good job. Go home. Sleep well.
This was, I mean, it's noble that you think that, but this is totally just a cash grab. This was just, like, for ratings and
the commercials. The
I was
going to
say, apt as you said, yeah, it was just... peppered with commercials for the toys in between here, which was probably the beginning of the end for the Star Wars universe, as far as capitalism goes.
Before we got to this whole, like, Matrix-y Life Day Tree of Life celebration, Han gets...
Which, by the way, makes less sense than the movie Tree of Life, which is hard to do. I'm just saying.
Just about as long, too.
Yeah, no joke.
Han and Chewie get to... They make it back to Chewie's house, and there's a guard left there, and the guard's actually getting ready to attack Lumpy.
Yeah.
And that's when Chewie shows up, and the guard catches Chewie and Han.
Guard,
like,
being a fully costumed stormtrooper, which, by the way, seeing a stormtrooper on your television in 1978,
cool.
You know, you were like, oh, awesome, do cool things, please, be cool. And this guy
tripped over a piece of wood.
This guy, yeah, absolutely, and falls off a balcony with a Wilhelm scream, I'll give him that.
Yes,
but still,
I picked that up too.
So Han Solo.
Han's like, look over there. I mean, it's that bad.
He murders a man on Life Day, which I feel like is not in the spirit of the holiday. like I feel like
not before dinner anyway.
Right. I feel like they could have maybe come up with a more creative way to dispatch of the bad guys in a holiday special.
Just pretending like he was going to go for this gun that was on the ledge. Yeah.
Make him an honorary Wookiee? Like, convert him to the rebellion?
No, just trick him into leaving. And then, like, Art Carney's able to just get on the radio and be like, your trooper took some supplies and ran off.
Robbed me blind.
Oh.
And the guy's just like,
did he now?
Oh, all right. Well, we'll send out a search
Since
party.
Nobody lies in space, I'll take you at face value and send all of my troops after him. Yeah.
You're on Kazook, you say? We'll be there shortly to retrieve him.
But at this point is when Harrison Ford at least wakes up a little bit.
He's
in the presence of Mala.
Everybody pipes up.
You stand up and take notice when Mala's in the room. And her 7-inch stilettos.
That Wookiee ass.
Jesus.
Oh, my God.
That 200-year-old Wookiee ass.
But seriously, like, Harrison Ford at this point kind of, I'm not saying he's engaged. No. I'm just saying.
Well, he's standing for a start. Up. He's no longer sitting down
being propped
to deliver
up by sandbags,
his lines.
Like, he has that moment where he picks up Lumpy. He's like, hey, come here. You okay? He's showing more affection for this Lumpy, like, for Chewie's son than Chewie is himself. Like, Chewie's just like, that's the charm of Peter Mayhew, guys.
When you look at it, though, I mean, Chewbacca, ultimately, this special tells us, has abandoned his wife and child to go off and fight for the, you know, he can
wouldn't
perish
you?
Any day.
If this is your life at home, couldn't you come up with any excuse you could and get the fuck off the planet?
Mala cooks. She looks good in an apron. Come on.
Don't wait up, Han and me. We got some smuggling to do, and we'll be out for a while.
It's going to be another all-nighter, Mala. Sorry.
Gotta get that Kessel run down to 11 parsecs.
Oh, my God. We're still practicing. Are you ever going to come back? No, you're breaking up on me. Tell our carny we said hey.
Wait a minute. Now, wasn't this the segment that Conan busted on him on Ford?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I love totally that. That is one of the greatest moments in television
poor
history.
Harrison
it was 2006,
Ford.
I believe.
He has to keep a straight face talking to these. He's like, you guys enjoy your life day. You guys are like...
You're like family.
Like family to me.
So he goes on Conan O'Brien in 2006, mm-hmm. and Conan starts messing with him about this. And, of course, the trump card, the ace in the hole, is that he's got footage. He's got clips. And Ford's not even acknowledging that this thing ever happened. He's completely got his head in the sand. And Conan's like, oh, really? Well, look, right over there, see?
I sympathize with
one of Coco's top moments, in my opinion. I really think.
Well, when they shot this in what 78, some or maybe 77. Who
they
knows?
Did. They know they shot it in 78, like June. 2 weeks before it was released.
Correct.
And so, you know, back in the 70s, I mean, had VCRs even come out by then? So the idea of like something being kept and taped and then passed around for generations.
My understanding is that the reason that copies still exist is because the tapes that were sent to the CBS affiliates that mm-hmm. aired this thing, those were the ones that have been copied over and over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. I mean, now that we've got, you know, the internet, it'll live on forever.
But that's right.
It was those bootlegged copies from the TV stations that kept this thing alive for 30 years.
So, 1978, Harrison Ford probably thought this was a twinkle in his eye.
Nobody watched that.
It's a good thing there's no way that there's no computer network that in the future people will be able to see this in a whim.
I mean, I like that we're talking like Harrison Ford's the only one that should be embarrassed by this thing.
No, Carrie Fisher deserves.
No, absolutely.
She owns it, though. You hear her talk about it now.
Does she?
Well, she, you know her. She doesn't apologize for anything, but she totally owns the fact that she's like, yeah, I guess that happened. I don't know. I don't remember at all.
Oh, my gosh.
According to what I read, like, she requested that she sing in this special. That was, like, her one condition that I have to sing.
What a horrible
decision. It was somebody's bad idea.
Yeah.
They wrote
might as well
ditty.
Have been hers.
And we all had to suffer for it. Well, first off, she performs the ceremony. Like, she gives this, like, commencement speech mm-hmm. as if, like, she has done Life Day commencement before.
Mm-hmm,
where she's
rope.
Like, this is your day, but we all hope that this day brings us closer to peace and justice and freedom.
And that,
so
that
is
good
the
Wookie
wish.
Shit.
What does she say? So is the will of the life tree. Or yep. Like, she ends it with some weird Catholic, like, ending of the, so say we all. You know, it's just when she goes into Battlestar Galactica.
You.
And then they go into singing the song, which is just like with Bea Arthur. She sings a song that's kind of lyrics to the Cantina song.
Mm-hmm.
This is lyrics to the John Williams Star Wars theme.
I was so hoping it was going to be like the Bill Murray Star Wars.
Yeah. Oh, no such luck.
Oh, no. I would take Bill Murray singing the Star Wars song any day over this. The lyrics are horrible. She can't sing a
lick. She misses that high note at the end.
Oh, my. And they tried, and they every note in between. To cover it. They try so hard to cover that high note with the music, and there's just no having
it. If you look at Ford and Hamill at this point, too, they know it's over. They know they saw this thing go out the door a long time ago. But the looks on their faces, they're not even hiding it at this point. They're just like, I really wish I was anywhere but here.
They cut to Harrison Ford, and then 1.2 seconds later, immediately dissolve out of him as quickly as possible.
Yes.
Like, that was the one 1.2 second section.
Not
where
that focusing on Carrie is a whole lot better, because her eyes are going in two different directions.
Suddenly she's smiling.
But then they cut to like some weird like hero shot of Chewbacca, his head just like floating. And then
so
like
weird.
A montage of like, hey, remember the cool Star Wars stuff? Hey, hey, look at
Here's
all this
why you
stuff.
Love the movie.
And at that point, while I'm watching it, I'm going, yeah. Where's Alec Guinness? Like, why didn't
they did show a shot of him.
Yeah, why didn't he? You mean we couldn't get Ghost Obi-Wan to show up for a little bit? I would love to be a fly on the wall for the conversation that they had to have at least approached Alec Guinness about, like, hey, we're thinking about doing this holiday special. Here's the script. What do you think? And he's just like, blow me. There is no way on earth, in heaven nor hell, that I will show up in this shit. But they did get him. They got him with the footage from the movie.
It's surprising that everybody else signed up for it. Were they contractually obliged to star in this?
Well, I mean, at that point,
I guess they had to be.
They had to know, like, they had to have been going into production, at least pre-production, for Empire at
but
the time.
But were they just, I mean, signing on to a three-picture deal is one thing, but signing on to every little
that had to,
shitty
that had
made
to be
for
a
TV.
Part of it. That had to be a part of it.
I guess so. Alec Guinness got a better agent than the rest of them. All you got to do is star in a couple Oscar-winning movies.
It's entirely possible that none of them really thought it was going to be that bad.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, there was always the. I mean, Star Wars was everything it touched turned to gold at this point.
But the fact that George Lucas was backing away from this slowly, he was like, "I want nothing to do with this."
He tells it, he was just too busy. He was just too busy, you know, building his company and working on Empire and doing all of this. So he subcontracted. He let other people have his property and his characters, and he hasn't done it since. Well, until, you know, handing the keys over to Disney.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
And I'm sure we're gonna see a bunch more Christmas specials now.
You know that what? Watching this kind of made me wonder what they would do nowadays with this. Would it be as bad as this was?
Well,
can anything be as bad?
What
as
do
this?
You think the story would be if we did? Because there's no way we can't do what we usually do on the podcast where we like recast it.
Yeah,
there's no way. But how do you think that they would do? Like, what would they at least base the story on now that we've got the prequels and the original films?
You know what? Get Jake Lloyd. How old is Jake Lloyd now?
He's
got to
be 20.
Like, yeah. So he's playing, I guess it'd be too close to Hayden Christensen's age, right? I was going to say, if he were in the teens, it'd be nice to get like a preteen Jake Lloyd.
I don't think we would see a live action version.
No.
I think what they would do is take the computer animated stuff that we see in the Clone Wars, and they'd make like a Clone War holiday special.
That'd be great, actually.
I think it'd make the most sense. I mean, you gear that more towards kids.
Let's see how the Jedi spend their holidays, their life day. You know, get Sam Jackson to show up there.
Oh my God, voice it. Yes. Grab my present out of the stocking. It's
I'm
the one
tired
that
of
says
these
bad motherfucker.
Tired of these motherfucking Wookiees. This motherfucking tree of life.
So, Walt, as the one guy here who saw this when it first aired,
right?
You were 5 years old. Mm. Yeah. How like your honest feelings about it? Like, were you
confused?
Very.
Yeah.
Confused
yeah.
would be probably the first word that comes to mind.
Questioning your sexuality.
Yeah. Am I really into Wookiees? Because that Mala boy. Again, when you're five and you got stormtroopers on your TV, I mean, and I think that they probably were banking on the fact that we'd take whatever they were going to spoon out.
Yeah.
I'm sure that my parents, you know, sitting behind me watching this thing, realized that they were watching a big steaming turd burger.
Yeah.
But, and I don't even know that I can say it held my attention for the solid 2 hours. I mean,
It
tried the patience of a five-year-old that lived and breathed Star Wars.
Yeah.
So what can I tell you? Perplexed, definitely. Betrayed, certainly.
Yeah. Now, after seeing this and then Empire coming out a year, like 2 years later.
Right.
How were you excited? Did this kill any kind of excitement you had for it? Or were still?
No.
Yeah.
No, that bounced right off.
Did you know at that point
they got a pass?
That Boba Fett was going to appear? Or did you think it was just this one-off character they made for the cartoon? Did they allude to him being in Empire Strikes Back? I can't even recall.
In 78, I don't think they were alluding to anything.
Well,
still.
You know, they would leak out little stuff about the sequels that were coming up. Lucas was very smart about that kind of thing, always has been, about keeping it in the public consciousness, because he'd leak some little tidbit that people would start repeating in, you know, the days before the internet and chat rooms and stuff like that. Right. So, yeah, we had heard that there was going to be this really awesome character, Boba Fett, but we had no idea where he fit into the story, what his purpose was. We knew he was a bad guy, so, okay, new villain. But does he work for the Empire? I mean, you know, where does he fit into this whole piece? Stuff about Empire was leaking at this point. I remember hearing that Darth Vader gets his head cut off.
Oh yeah!
Oh my God!
That's
really?
Right.
And then of
that.
Course it's a dream sequence. Mm-hmm. You know, so I mean, he could get away with little cheats like that.
What a cheap bastard!
I like the idea that at the beginning of this, Boba Fett's kind of a good guy. At least, you know, he's ambiguous. You don't know where he is.
You don't know where to put him. You don't know what to do with him yet.
Yeah. I like that he sounds like the computer from 2001: Space Odyssey.
I think they should have just used Jeremy Bullock in a costume. He should have just shown up.
Yeah.
In the middle of this. Like, this should have been like the Bounty Hunter special. You get Dengar and Zuckuss and IG-88. And actually give them a little bit of time. You know,
I can see.
I think that was Robot Chicken, if I'm not mistaken.
That would have been a better holiday special, though. You know, forget this. Forget the Wookiee thing, because honestly, you're going to kill half your audience with 15 minutes of Wookiee speak. Why not have it be like a Star Wars adventure featuring Luke and Han and Leia, and you know, an adventure about them? And you could still fit in all these cameos from these other actors, but have it a story more about the central Star Wars characters.
Sounds like a good idea, doesn't it?
It sounds like an amazing idea. I don't know how you messed this up in the fall of
78.
Man. Yeah.
It's not like these guys were doing anything else. Well, no. Ford wasn't even doing Indiana Jones yet.
No, you're right. Predates that even, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, he could have been starting production, because that and Empire came out, what, around the same year? What was Raiders, 80, 81?
81, I think.
I think he did Blade Runner before Raiders.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, you might be right. I'm going to look it up real quick.
Yeah, look that up. But it's just beyond me, and this is kind of what I said earlier about the holiday specials we see now with Madagascar and Toy Story and even, like you said, Kung Fu Panda. Wow. To take the central characters, the ones that people know.
The entertainment industry has learned from these types of mistakes,
right.
Clearly.
At least we hope so.
Rule number one, don't make it a two-hour special. You know, buy the half hour and cram a couple extra commercials in there.
Right.
And then show the fucking Charlie Brown special again and call it a day.
Is this something, Walt, that have your kids seen this?
Oh, God, no.
Will they ever see it?
When they get in trouble.
It's like discovering religion for yourself. Well, it's like, I'm going to let them discover it for themselves.
Some things you just have to figure out on your own. All right. Well, number one, my kids are both boys, by the way, and they're 8 and 12. They'll see this when they're old enough to appreciate how bad it is.
Yeah.
They'll see this when I can sit down and crack open a beer with them and be like, yeah, you think you know it all.
And apologize.
Right.
I'm so sorry.
You think you've seen everything.
Wait till you see this piece of shit.
Let me show you something you haven't seen.
All right, so I guess as Star Wars fans, there's no way we could recommend that you watch this. But there are moments that are worth seeing, moments that are worth checking out.
Yeah.
Maybe there's some redeeming qualities, and that's
I'm proud of it as a fan. I'm proud to say that, like, one of the biggest disasters in television history bears the Star Wars stamp. I mean, again, it's always extremes with Star Wars, you know, and I love running into people that don't know that this exists.
Yeah,
and
I'm sure George Lucas appreciates that too.
Oh, absolutely.
He said if he could, he would hunt down every copy and smash it with a hammer, but he just doesn't have the time.
Well, it's like that Legend of the Jerry Lewis film that only like five people have seen.
Yeah.
You know, the day the clown cried,
yeah,
right? The clown in the concentration camp. Mm-hmm. None of us will probably ever see that, you know, and most people haven't seen this. So the idea that there's that legendary badness to it, in this case, it kind of lives up to it, which is, you know, nice, because it's really hard to overstate the putridness of this thing.
And it's amazing how immediate, like, the reaction to it was. This wasn't something that, like with the prequels, where it took a couple of years for people to kind of, you know, everybody you talk to
the
now.
The hypnosis
like,
wore off real quick.
Exactly.
On this one.
Yeah. This was like immediately people recognized it for what it was.
It was bad. Let's just get over it. They got, and that's the benefit of not having something like the internet back then. So you can just flame
or
the
VCRs,
hell out of it. Okay, so before we wrap this up, you found an interesting news tidbit that you were telling me about before we got started.
Yeah, I don't know if these events are related or not, but the day after this special aired, Jim Jones and all of his followers drank the Kool-Aid.
No way.
Wound up, yes. You know, dead in Guyana.
You're kidding. Wow.
I'm not kidding. I'm not making that up.
Coincidence?
It was the Star Wars holiday
just
special.
Drove them to it. Like,
they were having second thoughts.
They were just, I give up.
Star Wars is dead.
Clearly,
there's nothing to live for.
This is the end, everybody. We've all witnessed it firsthand.
No, Jonestown was Jones. Like, the whole events that led to the tragedy were starting while this thing was on TV.
Wow.
So good job, Star Wars Holiday Special.
You killed people.
If you want to check out the Holiday Special, we've got a link on our Facebook page right now. It leads to a Daily Motion site that has the whole two-hour feature right there for you to watch.
Now, does that version, sorry, I have to interject, does that version have audio? Because the version I started to watch didn't have audio.
No, it absolutely does have audio. Good.
You have to hear the audio.
I tried watching it on YouTube. There was someone that had a bunch of different parts, but then it turned out he had parts missing. And so, like, I had to hunt down, and then I realized, oh, shit. Like,
it's somebody's job now at Disney to try to pull this thing off the internet.
They definitely had a full-time job. Every video that had the animated version, like that animated cartoon part, that's been pulled almost from everywhere.
Interesting.
But yeah, Daily Motion, the link, if you want to check that out, it's on our Facebook page. Let us know what you think about this right there in the comments. You know, just tell us your opinion. If you liked it, if you didn't like it, what you liked or didn't like about it, and how you would have done it differently. And Joel or I or both of us, we'll take a look and we'll respond and let you know if we had similar thoughts. Thank you, Walt, for joining us for this.
Yay.
I'm always a pleasure.
So happy to have you on for this thing. Whenever we talk Star Wars, it's always fun to have you here because you think of shit that I, in a million years, could not even begin to think of. And I like to fancy myself kind of the Star Wars fan. Jeff, thank you for recording us, sir. Hope the poop gets consistent again.
Stay green.
stay green.
Stay thirsty, my friend.
And we have been the Editing Bay. My name's Joe.
And I'm Joel.
And we'll check you next time.
Happy holidays.
You've been listening to the Next Wave Radio Network.
That's fucking gold.